Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Larry Jacobs. Actually, we're swinging in the afternoon here on the East Coast. It's noon, but our guests are both on the East and the West Coast today, and we're thrilled to have them with us. We're going to be talking to Linda Gojack, the current President of National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, and also Mike Shaughnessy, the immediate past president of NCTM, and I'm going to introduce them in just a few seconds. This show is going to be archived over at education-talkradio.org, which is our website. And I have a big thank you today to our friends over at Proof Rock Press for sponsoring this show. And I always like to spell that for people. It's P-R-U-F-R-O-C-K, Proof Rock Press. They're sponsoring today. They have a great resource. It's fantastic from Proof Rock, the math dictionary for kids that, with more than 100,000 copies in print. I love this. The Math Dictionary for Kids is America's best-selling homework helper. I got a big smile on my face, okay? Equipped with this, I could have used it when I was a kid. Equipped with this handy reference of more than 400 full-color illustrated definitions, your child will never be stumped by an unfamiliar math concept again, teachers tell the parents. The Math Dictionary for Kids is also great, I just love this, for parents needing to brush up on a math term or strategy before helping their children with homework. This is the Math Dictionary for Kids. It's available from bookstores or directly from proofrock.com. And again, that's P-R-U-F-R-O-C-K, proofrock.com. The Math Dictionary for Kids is also available for the iPad, featuring all the content of the book. The iPad app also includes lots of advanced study tools. The app is available on Apple's App Store. And again, it's the Math Dictionary for Kids, great for the kids, teachers know that, and also great for the parents as they help them. Proofrock.com. Thank you guys for sponsoring today's show with NCTM, which is one of my favorite guests. I'm going to bring both my guests on now. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine. I couldn't be better, as a matter of fact. And, of course, Linda Gojack is the president of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, NCTM, nctm.org. And the other voice you will hear, Mr. Michael Shaughnessy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Larry, how you doing there? Good to hear your voice.
Good. How's life over in Portland, Oregon?
It's beautiful. It's the time of year when it's not raining in Oregon, but don't tell anybody in California.
I won't do that. Linda, how's life outside of Cleveland?
I'm sitting here looking at Lake Erie, and it is gorgeous.
Oh,
absolutely gorgeous.
Fantastic. That is absolutely excellent. And let me just explain, NCTM is the public voice of mathematics education, providing vision, leadership, and professional development to support teachers in ensuring mathematics learning of the highest quality for all students. More than 80,000 members, 230 affiliates, NCTM is the world's largest organization dedicated to improving mathematics education in pre-kindergarten through grade 12. Okay, congratulations. It's a great organization. They have wonderful shows, and I'm starting to arrange to get the regional chairs for your regional meetings on.
Good. Excellent.
Oh. Yeah. We want
to. You were able to do that last year, too, I think, Larry, as I recall. So.
We did, Mike, as a matter of fact, and it worked out great, and I hope it helped get attendance built and it got people more involved in what was going on at the show. Because, as you guys well know, not only do you have your big convention, but you also have these three regional ones in the fall. The big one is in the spring, okay? And we'll have plenty of shows before that. But these smaller conferences of NCTM that are regional will have a lot of exhibitors there. The teachers can go and see a million new products, et cetera. And I'll tell you, I just want to do all I can to make sure everybody gets over there.
Well, that's terrific. I think, as you know, those regionals are in Dallas, Hartford, Connecticut, and Chicago this year, Larry.
They are indeed. They are indeed. And can you believe, I could have gone down to the Hartford one, but I have to be in New Orleans for the INACL show that week. Can you believe it?
Oh, that's too bad.
I know. I feel bad about that. So
you still owe me a sandwich.
That would be a Bassett's turkey sandwich located, for your convenience, at the Reading Terminal Market in my hometown of Philadelphia. Okay? I want to start this off. We labeled this show Mathematics Education at Home and Abroad. And I was going to make a joke, Linda, that Mike would do the app. Mike is at home and you're abroad.
Not funny.
Right? But I decided not to do that joke because I figured you'd get mad at me.
Good.
Thank you. And thank you for laughing, Mike. I thought it was funny, too.
You two okay. Knock it off right now.
All right, I will, I promise. Okay. Linda, why don't you start off? I just want to start off with your recent trip to the Far East. That, to me, is a very cool thing. And both of you were together on that trip. There may have been others as well. You were on that trip, weren't you, Linda?
Yes, I was.
Tell our audience what happened.
National Congress on Mathematics Education.
That introduces the International Congress of Mathematics Education. Okay,
correct.
And Mike can join in here, too. You're in Seoul, Korea. So one of you
tell me
about it.
That's right. There were educators from all over the world, including 800 classroom teachers from Korea. And I have no idea how many Korean students actually spent 2 days in the exhibit area. But what a wonderful opportunity to really get firsthand what's going on in mathematics education around the world.
And what is going on in mathematics education around the world? And, you know, that brings up an interesting point. We're always, our ranking is supposedly dropping. Mike, did you get that sense when you were there?
You know, Larry, it's really interesting. Not so much. We of course, do not score as well in some of these international tests as our Asian colleague countries and some other countries. But what's really interesting, at the very beginning of that conference, the equivalent of what would be their Secretary of Education, that Minister of Science and Education in Korea, said that one of their biggest goals is to get more creativity in thinking going in the Korean schools, because that's an area that they have not done as well as the United States has and other countries in the past.
So, in other words, they're good at doing the basics, and they're great at teaching the basics, but perhaps they're not quite as strong in thinking outside the box. Is that what you mean?
That is exactly right. They feel that they have not done as well in thinking outside the box, and that therefore, in terms of problem solving or engineering problems and things like that, that they feel they lag. And they were very open about it. This was at the opening session in front of everybody. So.
Were there American teachers there? And Lynn, you can talk on this. Were there American teachers there as well?
Yeah, actually, there was an opportunity, and there was a good representation from classroom teachers to apply for a travel grant through the National Science Foundation and NCTM. And so we had a very good representation of American classroom teachers, as well as one of the highlights for us, I think, was there was a U.S. booth. A special booth in the exhibit area for the United States, which included mathematical education organizations as well as projects that were going on all over the United States. And we had a lot of interest in that area that not only included NCTM and its publications, but also the Council of Presidential Awardees in Mathematics, which are all outstanding classroom teachers that have been recognized nationally, to have some opportunities to share videos of excellent classroom practice from presidential awardees. So it was really an exciting area. I actually spent quite a bit of time hanging out there and just talking to classroom teachers from around the world, and there was a great deal of interest in what we do in the United States in our classrooms from K through 12. So it was really a wonderful opportunity, and that was there was just a lot of hustle and bustle in that exhibit area. So that was very cool.
Mike, did you find that the International Congress took place in Seoul, but not everybody there was Korean, I'm sure.
It was like about 90 countries, wasn't it, Linda?
I was just going to say, not even necessarily Asian, of Asian descent. And And I'm curious, you know, was there an exhibit hall? I assume there was.
There was. There were exhibits, like Linda described. There were five countries that had special exhibits each time at ICME. There are some countries that are picked out for national exhibitions. For example, India was one of those countries. I can't remember. Of course, Korea, the home country, was always one of them as well. And but there were all kinds of exhibits from other organizations, international organizations, International Association of Statistics, for example. United States two-year college mathematics organization was over there, MAA, Math Association of America.
Is that the two-year college thing?
The two-year college, the AMATIC, Association of Mathematics Teachers of Two-Year Colleges. So they were there.
Well,
they had the initials
for that one again.
AMATIC, AMATYC. That's a good group for you to talk to sometime.
Yeah, I never heard of them before. And I usually when
very good group to talk to.
Yeah, I like that. And also I like it because I deal a lot with community colleges, et cetera, on our higher education talk radio programs.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. So thank you. I'm going to get in touch with them, for goodness sakes. What I was driving at with the exhibits, and Lynn, I can swing back to you. Were there any American mathematics publishers over there, for example, were sponsored today by Proof Rock Press? I don't know if they were over there in particular, but there are many, many others. And the reason I'm asking that, with your American eyes, Do we dominate the educational publishing world in mathematics, or is it kind of spread out evenly, or how's it all work?
I don't know that there were any American publishers per se. There were a couple of publishers from Eastern Asia that have actually exhibited at our NCTM conferences.
Cool.
Who were there, and I think in general the in the exhibit area it tends to be. As far as it's not so much a publishing area as it is an opportunity for different countries to share what's going on in their own countries. And sometimes that involves publications. Other times it just involves projects that are going on. And one of the things that was really interesting in this exhibit area was that I would say about half of it was kids in schools from all over Korea who had brought some really interesting projects for both the attendees and for area school children to come in and visit and get their... So they were building geometric shapes. They were playing with probability. They were looking at some of the history of mathematics in Korea and in Eastern Asia. It was absolutely fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating.
That is just great. Did either of you make a presentation there, or were you just kind of meandering through?
I made a presentation, Larry, that was part of our U.S. Presentation, the U.S. Official presentation.
Great.
And in my case, I shared a little bit of information about the history of standards and mathematics in the United States and how NCTM was, the first group to launch mathematics standards in the United States, and then how now we've evolved to the point where we have Common Core state standards, and shared a little information about that with people from the rest of the world.
Wow, what a treat! What a great treat! I'm so glad we had good representation there with you two there. I think
we had a lot of mathematics educators from all over, Larry, and there's a lot of sharing that goes on in what's called topic study groups at ICME. There must have been something like about 30 of these topic study groups, and then so you meet a couple of days for long periods of time with the same people from all over the world. In my case, for example, I spent a good deal of time in the topic study group on research on the teaching and learning of statistics. And so you make that choice, and you just so it's like you have these small little conferences within a conference at ICME, and you get to know people from other countries very, very well. So it's very special, ICME's, once every four years.
It is special, and I know both of you, and I know we had good people there representing us. No response? You agree?
Oh, well, we did, and it was much more. I think the point is that Linda and I are trying to make it was much more than just the two of us. We had mathematics educators from all over the United States.
I thought you meant from all over the world. I'm sorry, I didn't
understand
that.
Oh, for sure.
That.
Oh, no. From all over the world,
but there are
too.
Others
yes.
from the United States there. That's
many, many, many other people from the United States.
Good. I had lost track of that, for goodness sakes. You know, Mike, I want to segue over to something. You said that you found that, just generally speaking, we perhaps are a little less rigid and we think out of the box here mathematically better than perhaps the Koreans or someone else. And by the way, that's just the generality, okay, obviously. But it brings up another question we had talked about discussing today, which is what you did in L.A. Los Angeles with the High School Reasoning and Sense-Making Institute, which seems to me that that's a kind of a nice segue from thinking outside the box to talking about the High School Reasoning and Sense-Making Institute in Los Angeles. Mike, do you want to talk about that?
Sure, Larry, thanks. This is the second summer that NCTM has offered these summer institutes, one in both for elementary teachers and the high school institute that you spoke about. We had one last year in Orlando and this summer in Los Angeles. Both of them have been very, very well attended. They're different than regular conferences. We have folks that are sort of, they pick an area. They pick, like, say, algebra or geometry or statistics that they want to concentrate on working on for 3 days. And although we do have some plenary speakers and some sessions that they can make some choices, they're with some facilitators for about four sessions during that time for several hours. And in those sessions, for example, the one I worked in happened to be geometry, we spent a couple of hours working through an extended problem with the teachers, putting them in the role that they would put their students in, working on something that would very different than a regular problem out of a book. It would be, in some cases, ill-defined, and they would have to make some assumptions, put constraints on it. It might involve some mathematical modeling. And then share their solutions and their thinking with one another.
And Mike, I just want to say you are Dr. Mike Shaughnessy, and you taught for years at University of Oregon or Oregon State? I can't remember.
Oregon State University and then at Portland State University, Larry.
Okay.
In Oregon.
Okay. And so did you make up the questions or the problems, the challenges?
No, actually, these were selected out of some existing NCTM resources. One of them was taken out of one of our journals, the mathematics teacher. Another one was taken out of a book called Navigating Geometry for in K-12. So they were selected by a group of folks that organized the conference. And my role in this particular conference was to be one of the facilitators of the geometry group. So I had my partner, Fred Rectanis, and I had 100 geometry teachers. So there were like 500 teachers altogether that attended the high school conference, which was very, very good. And so Fred and I
and they
had
came
these
from all over
geometry
the country,
teachers working in groups for 3 days.
That is absolutely excellent. And Lynn, I'm going to swing over to you, but I don't know whether you were there. I'm going to ask both of you. There was also, which I think is incredibly important, the obvious one for math is always secondary school. But I love talking about elementary and middle school math. And you had the Algebraic Reasoning Institute in Atlanta. Should I go to Mike or Linda?
Oh, I think Linda for this one.
Linda, you're on.
I'm on. We had about 500 teachers.
Yep.
Mostly classroom teachers who attended this, and our focus was around the notion of building algebraic reasoning so that when kids get into a formal algebra course, they aren't slammed with all of these new ideas. So we want to get kids thinking in terms of making generalizations, seeing numeric patterns, connecting what they know about number and reasoning to more abstract ideas, and we had a group from grades 3 through 5 that attended a series of breakout sessions, and then we also had 6th and 7th grade and then 8th grade where they start to hit a more formal introduction to algebra. The timing on this was wonderful because the day I arrived in Atlanta was the article in the New York Times, Is Algebra Really Necessary? So it gave us
perfect,
a wonderful context to start talking about why is algebra so important for kids to learn and to start thinking about.
Well, let me ask you a question
about,
then, Linda. Let me segue from that. Let me ask you a question I just made up. Why is algebra so important to learn?
So let me answer that with a question. Why is Shakespeare so important to read? You know, it's part of becoming an educated person. It's part of developing, going further with what is mathematics all about beyond just add, subtract, multiply, and divide, fractions, whole numbers, and decimals. It allows you to think about how do we apply these more abstract ideas, and how do we help kids back to what the High School Institute was all about, doing this in an environment of reasoning and making sense. And I think when we really try to approach algebra in a way that does not help kids to make sense, that's when we start losing them. So all of this stuff is wonderfully connected. And if we can help teachers to make those connections and prepare kids, I think we're going to see a lot of kids who not only are more successful in math, but really have an appreciation for what mathematics is all about.
Just like Shakespeare.
That's right.
That was a great analogy. I loved that analogy, by the way. That was just excellent. I have to ask a question, though. The Algebraic Reasoning Institute in Atlanta, I'll stay with Linda here. The Algebraic Reasoning Institute in Atlanta was grades 3 through 8, which I think is wonderful if we start to put kids' feet in the water, okay, or maybe with water wings into the pool, so to speak, and get them used to understanding these things. When the teachers came into Atlanta for the thing, were they elementary? They're elementary school teachers. Are they particularly math teachers, or are they the general elementary school teacher that comes? Because I think this is wonderful, because we all know they hit a wall in eighth grade algebra. To get them used to it starting in grade 3 is just wonderful. So how does a third grade teacher get a kid involved in this? I think it's great.
So to answer the first part of your question, I think particularly in grades 3 through 5, although I'm sure we had some mathematics specialists, I would also venture to guess that a good part of that audience were just classroom teachers who love teaching math and were willing to give up a week of their summer to come learn more about it.
Great.
But also, I think in third, fourth, and fifth grade, what we want kids to start to do is be grounded in whole numbers and fractions and to start to see how they're connected to some of the algebraic thinking. So one of the things we did after we got teachers' feet wet on, you know, how is this connected to whole number operations, adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, what we think of, we learned in third, fourth, and fifth grade. But how do we go beyond that? How do we give kids problems to solve where they have to be able to extend a pattern and make a generalization? And then this is something I don't think I ever really understood until I started teaching, was how do we take that generalization and what does that look like if we graph it? And what is that graph a picture of? And how is that generalization connected to a rule that will give us how we can do this for any number? And then what does that look like as a graph? And how those are three different representations of the same idea. Larry, I spent more time in high school solving equations, making T-tables, and drawing graphs and never having any idea that those three ideas were connected.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and so, wow. You know, I kind of feel like I was ripped off, and I don't want kids today to be ripped off in the same way. So I think it's really important that the earlier we can start kids and teachers thinking that way, the more successful our kids are going to be in high school.
And I think it's wonderful. And again, I want to say, just to get them thinking, understanding, and seeing the implications of this into reasoning and making sense of things and to understand. And, Mike, I'm going to quote the famous line. I remember the first time you and I were interviewing, doing a show here, and I said, I'm not good at math, and you yelled at me and said, don't say that. Remember that? Because that's the thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I always say now, and I can't tell you how many times I have said this on the air, don't say I'm not good at math. Say I have to work harder to understand math. Okay?
And we have to work harder as teachers to help you understand that. And that's what NCTM is all about. It's helping teachers to do that.
Yeah, and we assume, and I'm going to use I loved your Shakespeare analogy, okay? You know, kids, anybody doesn't understand Shakespeare the first time, okay? You have to get into it. You have to work hard to understand it. Then you see the beauty of it, and you start to realize how it works and what he wrote and why it's so important and all that and how it fits in. I just think it's great. You know, it's interesting. I had a smile on my face as I was reading the ad for Proof Rock Press at the beginning, because I just have a line in front of me here. The math dictionary for kids is also great for parents needing to brush up on a math term or strategy before helping their children with homework. So now I'm going to let that segue to a question that we have talked about, okay? And I'll ask Linda this. How do parents, Linda, you're the president of NCTM, how do parents help their kids get through all this? School, everybody's heading back in the U.S. and Canada. Talk to me. What can the parents do?
You know, that's a wonderful question, because I spent 28 years teaching 5th and 6th grade math. And so there are a couple of things. Number one, parents should not think that they are their kids' teachers. If they are in some ways, but they don't have to be their kids' math teachers. That's what the teachers get paid the big bucks to do. So how parents can help is, you know, something as simple as making sure kids have a clean space to work and time to do homework, and the parents can have a good relationship, form a good relationship with the classroom teacher, so that if their kids are struggling, the teacher is aware of it, and the teacher can give kids, the parents some helpful hints. But making sure the kids, you know, have time to do homework, being willing to ask teachers questions. If the kids are struggling with the mathematics, you know, it may be as simple as, and I say this cautiously, helping kids to practice their basic facts once in a while at night. It's just like having kids sit down and read for a half an hour every night, making sure the kids take some time to learn the basics of what they need to know in mathematics and not overbook their kids, so that we don't want kids coming home from school and doing 3 hours of homework. But on the other hand, homework is an opportunity for kids to internalize what's going on in school that day. So the idea of practice and thoughtful homework is really important. And so it's really important for parents to give kids the time and the space to do that kind of work.
And a great answer. Mike, have you looked into this blended learning and flipped classroom and those two theories?
Say again, Larry, I don't think so.
Flipped classroom is where teachers...
I'm a little bit familiar with that, and I know some folks that are doing that. There are some people that are doing that at tertiary level in college as well.
Yeah, where the teacher creates the lecture and the student sees it online, literally. And then they come in and work as a facilitator during, the class time.
Right. Right. There's more of that going on. I don't know how much of that is going on at the secondary level, but I know there's more and more college professors that have been trying that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it is going on at secondary. My friend Kari Arstrom runs the Flip Classroom Network, which is really cool. Okay, they had a little convention, and that was it very well in Chicago this year.
Uh-huh.
I'm just curious, Linda, maybe I don't know if you know anything more about it than Mike does at this stage of the game, but it's just a different way to teach, and I was just wondering if NCTM had any thoughts on it.
And I'll talk from the elementary perspective. About it. I don't know so much about it at the secondary and college level. It makes me a little bit nervous at the elementary level because I think kids learn by doing and not by watching somebody else show them how to do it. And so it depends on what those, quote, lectures look like. And if kids are developing that whole idea, I'm going to go back to what Mike keeps talking about, is that reasoning and sense making, or are they just trying to mimic what somebody else is showing them? And I think so often kids that struggle in math struggle because they're mimicking what somebody else shows them rather than to try to make understanding for themselves. So it depends on what's going on from that, quote, lecture perspective, especially for young children. Maybe by the time they reach high school and college, it's a little bit better. But I so firmly believe that with young children, we are trying to form that foundation of understanding that just trying to mimic what somebody else is doing is not going to be successful for a lot of kids.
Yeah, you should get in touch with Kari Arster, if you want to put you guys in touch with her.
That'd be cool.
I don't know how. I'm not a proponent of either way. I just know that you hear all these words out there. Things are changing. You know, you guys know that as well as I do. Okay, and I'm just curious if NCTM had any thoughts about it. And I appreciate your professional insights into it. I do.
For older kids, Larry, it's intriguing to think about the possibility of putting out sort of the big ideas, maybe a little bit of the history of the ideas,
that would be great. Yeah.
In a something that would happen prior to class. So that, you know, class time could be used for a lot more discussion and interaction and the reasoning and sense-making piece. So I think it's got possibilities, and Linda's right on. It all depends on how that online piece is used, you know, what's done in that online piece.
Exactly. And the other thing is blended learning, where it's just a combination of online as well, where there's a lot more interaction between the teacher and the student, online, you know, that kind of thing. It's just a change out there, and I was just curious, you know, people are talking about these things, they're buzzwords, and some people are implementing them, I'm sure, with great success. So I'm just curious what you guys were thinking about. I want to swing over. We have about 5 minutes left. I wanted to swing over to Common Core. Okay, and there was just a survey out. I think I saw a response from the National Association of State Boards of Education. If I remember what it said, okay, it was that about 60% of American parents think Common Core will work and something like 40% don't. Okay, and so I'd love to have your thoughts on it, Mike. What do you think is going to go on with the Common Core and how it works with mathematics and the issues that the teachers, et cetera, are going to have with it?
One thing that's striking is that when this Common Core thing started a couple of years ago, Larry, the Council of Chief State School Officers and the people who drafted the Common Core were hoping that they might get maybe 15, maybe 20 states that might be interested in trying this as an experiment. And they were 43. Overwhelmed. Yeah. 45. Overwhelmed by the response. Although there have been a couple of states where there have been rumblings that maybe they would pull out of the Common Core, they haven't. No state has yet pulled out, and it's been 2 years now.
Good.
So I think I look at this as a grand experiment, and I hope it's done in that way, that as everyone goes forth and implements the Common Core, and the assessments come around, that we learn what it is that was done well on this first round of implementation and what needs to be improved. This has to be an ongoing thing. It can't be just, oh, we've done this now and it's implemented. There's a lot of work to go on in the future. So this involves a commitment from states, teachers, districts, organizations like NCTM to stay the course and try to make the best out of this. And we'll see.
Well, it's going to take some time. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, everybody comes down on No Child Left Behind. Okay, oh, my God, all the testing and all this sort of stuff. But it put a standard out there, and it can change over the course of time. Okay, we learn from these things. Somebody, you got to start it somewhere. Okay, and it's like Jamestown, Virginia. Even though they lost the colony or whatever, you know, the country expanded after it, because we learned what didn't work, for goodness sakes. Okay,
it's the same thing.
You got to start somewhere.
I have colleagues that I respect and have worked with for a long time who are convinced that this is an absolute disaster and it's the worst thing that we have done. And I have other colleagues who think that this is one of the more promising things that we have attempted in the United States in a while. And we don't know yet, you see, is my perspective on it. We really don't know yet. I think we have to stay the course for some more years and give it a chance.
You said it's ongoing. It evolves. It changes. But we got to start somewhere. I think it's good. Linda, your thoughts? You think it's good? Lynn?
Did we lose her?
I don't know. Wait a minute. Hold on a sec. I think we did. I don't know where she is. Hold on. Let me see if I can get her back here. Linda, are you
Hello?
There?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Linda. We lost you for a second.
All of a sudden, I was disconnected. But I can still hear what Mike is saying, and I 100% agree. And it's just, we have to give it some time. If we're going to expect results next year, it's just simply not going to happen. But if we wait a few years and really help teachers and kids.
Linda, I have to ask you the most important question, okay? I heard your dog barking in the background before. That was your dog, right?
Yes, her name is Pumpkin Pie, P-I.
There you go. That was my question. What kind of dog is Pumpkin?
Punkin is a little Havanese. Mike has met her, and she is going to be inundated next week because I'm taking her with me to NCTM headquarters for a two-day meeting. We're going on a road trip. She's going to learn some math.
Tell her not to get lost in Congress.
No, we're not going there. We're just going to Virginia.
So we're just
going to hang out at headquarters for a couple of days.
And now an even more important question. Mike, how are the grandkids?
Oh, thank you, Larry. Actually, Joan and I have them again next week, the ones from Seattle. And so they're just a blast, and they, of course, they just exhaust us when we have them. And we had our younger one from Argentina for some time this summer. I did get to see her a few days when I came back from Korea.
Yeah, Mike's daughter lives in Argentina in the gorgeous mountainous region down there, just incredible. And thankfully, the other ones live in Seattle, where they're close by. Okay, thank you both. You guys, I love having NCTM on. I love having you guys on.
I'm being on.
Right, thank you, Linda. I appreciate that. And tell Pumpkin Pie she's always welcome to bark on Education Talk Radio. She can call in on another line.
She's in the other room right now.
And Mike, the grandkids are always invited on as well.
You can ask my granddaughter some math questions next time, Larry.
There you go. And she'll put Grandpa to shame, I'm sure, for goodness sakes. Thank you both. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you very much for having us,
Larry. Enjoy the kids, the dog, et cetera, and the trip to Washington.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, Larry.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Linda Gojek, guys. Linda Gojek is the president of National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. She's doing a great job. Immediately preceding her was Mike Shaughnessy. They were both on today. And NCTM at nctm.org with their regional conferences coming up. We hope to have all of their regional chairs on to talk about the various things. They had a great summer. They went to Seoul, Los Angeles, Atlanta, the institutes, the congresses, et cetera, et cetera. It's just great. And this show was made possible. I can't thank them enough. Okay, from the folks, our friends, Joel McIntosh and his team over at Proof Rock Press. They sponsored today's NCTM show. They have this great resource. I just love this. The Math Dictionary for Kids. With more than 100,000 copies in print, the Math Dictionary for Kids is America's best-selling homework helper. Equipped with this handy reference of more than 400 full-color illustrated definitions, your child will never be stumped by an unfamiliar math concept again. And then I love this, and parents, go out and get this, please. The Math Dictionary for Kids is also great for parents needing to brush up on a math term or strategy before helping their children with homework. It's available from bookstores, or you can just go over to proofrock.com, and that's P-R-U-F-R-O-C-K, proofrock.com. The Math Dictionary for Kids is available on the iPad, featuring all the content of the book. The iPad app also includes lots of advanced study tools, and the app is available on Apple's App Store, so check that out. It's called The Math Dictionary for Kids. It's from Proof Rock Press, P-R-U-F-R-O-C-K, proofrock.com. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Linda. I love NCTM. We're going to do a lot more with them as we get through the fall. Tracy, thanks a million for setting up today's show. And Joel, thanks for being such a good help and running such a good job over at Proof Rock Press. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Education Talk Radio. Check our schedule. The show will be archived at education-talkradio.org. We love having you with us. Today's August 23rd, 24th. That's Thursday. Have a great day.